Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. We're broadcasting live from Greenpeace headquarters today, and we will have folks from Greenpeace in our second and third hour. It's going to be absolutely fascinating, but it's our first hour Wednesday. It's time for Middays with Mark. Congressman Mark Pocan on the line with us. Congressman Pocan, welcome back.
Hey, Tom. Glad to be here. Thank you.
So great to have you with us. And I should add, people can contact you. Your congressional website is pocan.house.gov, and the and people can tweet you at Rep. Mark Pocan. So, Congressman, the tax bill is slowly making its, well, who knows? It's off to conference committee. What does all that mean, and what are your thoughts on this Republican tax scam?
First of all, it is a scam in every way, from, the president saying he's not going to benefit and his rich friends are mad at him, to Paul Ryan saying that the middle class are going to get a tax break. I mean, every single bit of it is a lie. It's a scam. This is for their donors. Multiple Republicans have been either brave or stupid enough to say so publicly, and it's very obvious this is going to benefit the top, the wealthiest in this country more than anything else. And this has been the goal, the single biggest goal of Paul Ryan since he's been in Congress. So they're going to do everything they can to make this a reality. We have to be pushing hard on this. There are differences between the House and the Senate bill. They're both terrible, ugly, rotten bills, but slightly different in their terribleness and ugliness. So they're going to have to do a little bit of work, I think, to figure out how to get there. But I think they're going to do everything they can to try to get this done, or else their donors are not going to be happy. And we have to do everything we can to try to stop it and let them know that we're going to hold them accountable. If you vote for this bill, you're not coming back to Congress, because you just did something against the best interest of your constituents. So we've got a lot of work to do on this.
If you Google my name and Jude Waniski, W-A-N-N-I-S-K-I, or just Google my name and two Santa Clauses, T-W-O Santa Clauses, you'll come up with a number of articles that I've written over the years, and I've also written it as a chapter in at least one of my books. I'm pretty sure it's in Screwed, it might even be in Rebooting the American Dream. But Jude Waniski, back in the 70s in the Wall Street Journal, wrote an article. He was the co-founder of the Heritage Foundation, the co-founder of ALEC, and, a major, big deal guy in the Republican Party. And his two Santa Claus theory, and feel free to interrupt me or stop me if you already know this, Congressman, his two Santa Claus theory, which he laid out for the Republican Party in 1977 in the Wall Street Journal, was real, real simple. He said the problem the Republicans have been having since the Great Depression, and the reason why they keep losing elections, unless they run a liberal like Dwight Eisenhower, the problem that they have is that the Democrats have always played Santa Claus, and they give away gifts. They gave away Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, long-term unemployment insurance, occupational safety and health, child labor laws, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And the Republicans are always Grinch. right? The Republicans are always, or Scrooge, the Republicans are always yelling, no, no, we can't afford it. And he said, so what we've got to do is two things. We've got to turn Republicans into Santa Claus, and we've got to force the Democrats to shoot their Santa Claus. And he said it's a very simple process to do this. When Republicans are in power, when they control the House, the Senate, and the White House, run the national debt up as hard and as fast as you can with tax cuts. The tax cuts make you the Santa Claus. You're the Santa Claus of tax cuts. And then when Democrats come into power, start screaming about the national debt and use that to force the Democrats to do what Barack Obama almost did with the chain CPI. Cut Social Security, cut Medicare, cut Medicaid, and go after those Democratic programs. In other words, force the Democrats to shoot Santa Claus. How do we inform the American people that the Republicans have been running this strategy? Reagan did it. George W. Bush did it. It was done throughout the Clinton years with all the screaming about the deficit. It was done through the Carter years screaming about the deficit. It's why Jimmy Carter and Bill Clinton are the only two presidents who actually had balanced budgets. So how do we get the word out?
Well, I think we just have to really explain, not into the weeds on the details, but, one of the big things is they're doubling the personal exemption, right? And they're acting like that's the gift to the middle class. But when they take away another exemption that's $4,000 and they gave you maybe $5,800 or whatever the exact number is they gave you, suddenly most of that's gone. It's not even there. It's not really a doubling of anything. And I think, that's one of the things that people hear. At least when I look at comments that I get on social media, people are like, yeah, but they're doubling, my deduction, so I'm going to get something. No, you lost your personal exemption at the same time, and that was $4,000, so you didn't really get that much. And then when you look at all the other provisions that are going to be out there that you're going to wind up paying more for, and when you have $1.5 trillion or $1 trillion like in the Senate bill that gets added to the deficit and they come back, and I don't even think they're going to wait for Democrats to come in control, Tom, to do this. I think next year already they're going to be complaining about the deficit and they're going to try to go after yep. Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security. Then people are going to, whatever benefit they might have gotten, which is going to be just a few people in the middle class, that'll be totally gone and then some. So we just have to let them know, when their big priority is the estate tax and they say that small businesses and farmers are going to benefit, and instead we find out that, it's one-fifth of 1% of the people, it's like 5,000 people that benefited from it in the last year, or 5,000 to 6,000 people, and that only 80 of them, I think, in the 1 year they looked at were actually farmers. This is not a tax benefit for farmers. It's for really, really wealthy, probably corporate-type farms. But we have to get those kind of things across and let them know that at the end of the day, even the little exemptions they get will likely expire, and that some of these other things are in place for a long time for the wealthiest.
Yeah, great. And my apologies if my microphone sounded muffled there at the beginning. I dropped it.
didn't realize it. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. So Congressman, what's up with the legislative calendar? What's up with the possibility that the Republicans are going to, pass a budget? I mean, we're looking at the possibility of a government shutdown in the next week or so, that they'll pass a budget that's only a few weeks long, or a continuing resolution or whatever, or what all? I mean, what's going on with this? Should we be getting ready for a government shutdown? Should we be freaking out?
No, it's truly pathetic, the fact that they just can't do their jobs. They are in charge of the White House, the Senate, and the House. They should be able to do whatever they want to. But because they have been unable to, as we've seen this year, whether it be health care and many other issues that they've tried to bring forward, they just can't seem to get done because they know they're not in sync with where the American people are at. In this particular case, it's ridiculous. If they can't figure out how to, they've known this deadline has been out there for a long time of December 8th, and now they're going to give themselves two more weeks to come up with something, and they're going to vote for it themselves because they're not trying to work with Democrats. And then we hear that even then it's only going to be an extension into January. So we're funding government 2 and 4 weeks at a time instead of an annual budget, which is what our jobs are. It's truly pathetic that they are in charge and they can't get more done.
Yeah, remarkable. And we're here at Greenpeace. We're going to be doing the show the second and third hour today. And by the way, let me encourage people to call. Actually, the lines are already filling up. Congressman Pocan will be taking your calls for the hour here in our Middays with Mark session. There's our break. We'll be back with your calls for Congressman Mark Pocan in just a minute. He represents the 2nd District of Wisconsin. His website is pocan.house.gov. You can tweet him at Rep, as in Representative, R-E-P, Mark, M-A-R-K, Pocan, P-O-C-A-N. Rep Mark Pocan. Send him a tweet and say hi and thanks for being on our program. We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Live from Greenpeace USA. And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you live from the headquarters of Greenpeace USA. This is the headquarters, right?
Mm-hmm.
and with me in the studio is Elizabeth Jardim, who is the USA IT sector campaigner. I think a lot of the IT as in internet or as in information technologies. A lot of people think Greenpeace and the environment, and they don't think information technology.
Right.
Tell us about this.
Yeah, so Greenpeace has actually had a tech sector campaign for a little over 10 years now. Back around 2006, 2007, we realized the growing problem of chemicals in electronic waste, and that's really how we initially started working with tech companies. The cool thing about tech companies is they are really leading innovation. So we notice a problem that they have in their production or their operations. We really expect them to be able to find the solutions to fix that. So we've been working on the tech sector for about 10 years.
So what are some of the solutions?
Right. So right now we're really focused on the consumption of resources and dirty energy. Like right now all of us use our gadgets daily all the time and have many gadgets. So the production of these gadgets drives a lot of consumption of natural resources and dirty energy. And we're asking the tech sector to shift to designing gadgets that last longer, that are designed with recycled and recyclable materials, and also to use renewable energy to manufacture these.
What kind of response are you getting?
Well, we are getting some response in that some companies are starting to make progress. So in October, we released the Guide to Greener Electronics that ranks 17 companies on the different areas we're concerned about, looking at energy use, resource consumption. And, they weren't all Fs. That we were happy to see. There's definitely still a lot of progress that needs to be made. We feel like tech companies want to sort of race to improve. Like we saw this with the tech companies that operate data centers. After several years, we started to see companies like Apple, Facebook, and Google committing to power their data centers with 100% renewable energy, and they're steadily making progress on that. So now we're shifting beyond data centers to the supply chain, and there's still a lot of work to be done there. That's where a lot of the emissions lie. Apple has been the only company to make a commitment to power its supply chain with 100% renewable energy, but now that they've made that commitment, they're starting to enact it and showing the sector that it's possible.
Wow. That's great. Now, it seems like, particularly in the last couple of years, now that I think the power of solar dropped like just 7% last year. I mean, it's becoming exponential. Or if you know the exact number, please, correct me. But my understanding is that as of right now, in most parts of the world, and certainly in most parts of the United States, renewable energy is actually less expensive than fossil fuel-based energy. And in some ways more reliable, although that's depends on how it's done. So that's just kind of a no-brainer, right? For the big tech companies, hey, you're running a data center and you're using 50 megawatts, build the windmills out or whatever. But when you're manufacturing a chip and you need some beryllium and you need some molybdenum and where do you get these things? You get them from, in some cases, conflict places in Africa. Mm-hmm. The rare earth mine in the United States was shut down because the Chinese were dumping those products on the marketplace. And these are not only rare earths, and they're valuable and hard to get and therefore important to recycle, but they also, in many cases, are extremely toxic, chromium. So, that's kind of a complex issue. I can see where the whole industry would start saying, wait a minute, now you're talking about hurting us financially, whereas green power nowadays is going to help us financially. Mm-hmm. We'll be very happy with that. Mm-hmm. So what kind of response, what's going on there?
Yeah, it's complicated. The supply chains are definitely complex. Each device can use upwards of 60 different elements from the periodic table and often in very small amounts. So right now, one of the big challenges is how do you recover such small amounts from so many devices? Unfortunately, our devices, most of them are, smartphones are used for around 2 years and then they're replaced, and those phones, those products, and all of the components they're made up of just end up in the trash, and they're not used, and we're having to mine new inputs. So it is a big problem, but we're hoping that it will become economic to recover those materials as well. Some of like the inputs, like gold, it has immediate value to recover that and reuse it. As other materials become more scarce, then too, the sector needs to figure out how to recover them. So there are challenges to recovery and recycling, but not so much so that I don't think this sector can figure out how to do it.
Is recycling yet to the point where it's cheaper to extract rare earth minerals out of recycling than it is to buy them from some cheap mine in Central Africa or in China?
Yeah, that's it right now, from my understanding, no, which is why this problem persists. Mm-hmm. And each of these elements has its own supply chain. So like they're coming from different places. Like a lot of rare earth are coming from different mines in Russia and China. And then the conflict minerals are coming more from Central Africa. So a lot of work needs to be done among all companies to figure out where these materials are coming from, what the problems are, although we know many of the problems already, but then how to have more transparency and long-term relationships with their suppliers to fix some of these problems.
What can consumers do?
Well, the number one thing we're asking consumers to do right now is to be really conscious about the products that they're purchasing and using, and try to make sure that they first choose a device that is long-lasting, and then use it for as long as it lasts. When it starts malfunctioning, rather than just, okay, ordering a new one, try to repair it. There are repair shops out there, or there's tutorials online you can often find. So just try to extend the life of your devices as long as you can. And then when they really don't work anymore, find a place to recycle them.
Well, and that's the challenge. At home, I've got 4 or 5 old iPhones sitting around. I've got a couple of old computers. I got old hard drives that are, I can't even get cables for anymore. I've been reluctant to dump this stuff because all of it has my data, my passwords and things on it. And I don't know, even though a couple of the iPhones are so dead I can't revive them, I still don't know if there's something still stuck in a flash memory or an EEPROM. How do you, if you're concerned about security and recycling, because I've heard stories about people who left their phones at, turned their phone in, and then somebody in India is logging on to their iTunes address. So what's the advice?
So part of there's, unfortunately, when you recycle phones, sometimes they do sort of end up in non-responsible recycling settings where
they go to the gray market or the black market.
Yeah, and workers are exposed sometimes to like pulling apart the different metals, burning them, and it can create toxic fumes. So you do want to send it to a responsible recycler. In the States, we have something called e-stewards, e-stewards, and part of e-stewards' commitment is to also clear your data off the device. So they do that. If the devices are still functional, it is a good idea to refurbish them rather than recycle them down to their components. So that's something that e-stewards would look into if that's possible. They would clear the data first. I was going to say something else on that. Sorry.
That's okay. It's okay. It happens to all of us. We have a minute, so we're going to hit a break. What can people who are listening or watching right now do to support Greenpeace's IT campaign?
Sure. So right now we have a petition. If you go to greenpeace.org/USA/dobiggerthings, we have a global campaign pushing Samsung, the largest manufacturer of smartphones in the world, to switch to renewable energy. Right now the company uses only 1% renewable energy, and it's manufacturing millions of phones each year. So they have a long way to go. So if you go to that website, greenpeace.org/USA/dobiggerthings, you can sign our petition and send a direct message to the CEO of Samsung right now.
That's great. And Samsung USA, greenpeace.org/USA is the main website for Greenpeace USA.
Yes. Right?
In fact, I just brought it up on my computer. It's an amazing site. There's all kinds of cool stuff on here.
Thanks.
Elizabeth Jardim, thanks so much for dropping by and great talking with you.
Yeah, me too. Thank you.
We'll be right back after this. Hey, everybody's talking about superfoods, those nutritionally dense foods that are especially beneficial to your health. Did you know that one of the most powerful superfoods you can put into your body is beets? They're loaded with an important nutrient that increases your blood flow, which increases your energy.
But who wants to eat a pita pile of beets every day? Not me. But now you can get the energy benefits of beets in a powerful, concentrated superfood drink, Super Beets. Only Super Beets is made from beets grown to exacting standards, then concentrated into superfood crystals. Super Beets promotes the body's own natural ability to produce healthier circulation for increased energy and stamina all day long. So if you want the benefits of a powerful superfood, call 800-568-9889 or go to tomsbeets.com. With your first order, get another 30-day supply of Super Beets for free, plus indicator strips to see how Super Beets is working for you, and free shipping. So call 800-568-9889 or go to tomsbeets.com today. That's 800-568-9889, tomsbeets.com on the interwebs. In the studio is Elizabeth Jardim. She is the IT campaigner with Greenpeace. And again, you think Greenpeace, you think those ships that are stopping the oil, you know, the oil tankers and whatnot. But how big is the problem of IT pollution, both on the chemical side and then also on the electronic and maybe even the intellectual side?
Yeah. It's big and growing because of all of our reliance on the tech sector, both for the products themselves, but also for the internet and the data, most of which is now being housed in large data centers, which rely on a lot of energy. Mm-hmm. In our most recent report, we found that, you know, every year more than 1.5 billion smartphones are being bought, and you know, they're replaced every 2 years, so that's, you know, constant churn of these gadgets, and that's just smartphones. There's also, you know, we're buying lots of other products as well. We found that just from the 17 companies that we assessed, the amount of emissions generated from manufacturing the products in 2016 that they sold was 103 million metric tons of CO2, or roughly equivalent to the emissions of the Czech Republic. So that's every year. Whoa. This sector, in terms of their manufacturing, is generating those emissions. That doesn't include the data footprint. Many of them also operate data centers. So the sector on whole, it's big. It's like the size of countries right now in terms of emissions and growing.
Yeah, it's remarkable. Louise, we've got Elizabeth in the shot, right? Yeah, okay, great. So you were making some notes. Are there specific points you wanted to make? Is there anything that I've missed in my questions? Or what, you know, where is Greenpeace going with this? What's the future of this?
Yeah, your questions have been great, Tom. You've got let me get to all my talking points, which I appreciate. I guess I would just, that right now, I feel like since tech companies are sort of facing market saturations in some of the countries where they operate, there's a constant advertising and promotion of, like, you've got to get the new latest thing, and this new gadget solves these different problems that we didn't know we had, but now we know we have them. But to stop and think, do I really need something new? Do I really need to replace this device, you know, every year? And this idea that the product that we have right now that's the hottest thing, that it could become obsolete in just 1 or 2 years, doesn't make any sense. And we really need to send the signal to the sector that, you know, innovation needs to be defined by long-lasting gadgets that we can repair and replace. No, not every, you know, for five, that lasts 5 or 10 years, not just 1 or 2.
But there's sort of a catch-22 here. I mean, I just went through this experience with my iPhone. Mm-hmm. I had an iPhone 6 or 7, I guess it was a 7. And I figured, you know, I'm going to keep it for a couple more years. It works just fine. Weekend before last, I dropped it and it smashed. I mean, it was like shards of glass coming off, so I had to upgrade. But I was not going to, but when we upgraded the operating system, suddenly every time I touched anything, I had to count to 5 before, you know, old processors, the new operating system is so much more complex.
Right.
And so really that, you know, I mean, I've read the articles. This was not Apple trying to mess with me, trying to force me to upgrade. This is just the nature of technology.
Yeah, technology does change quickly. But it's also a design problem in my mind because, you know, laptops for a long time were designed in a way where you could replace the memory, replace the hard drive to you know, not have to replace
the construction.
So they could do the same thing with smartphones. Right now, very few smartphones are designed in ways to be modular, to just upgrade certain parts. The Fairphone, which is only available in Europe recently, created a module where you could replace the camera without having to replace the whole phone. So they felt like between Model 1 and 2, camera technology improved to the point where consumers might want the better camera but not replace the whole phone. And there's a few tablets that let you replace the memory. But in smartphones, I mean, the battery needs to be replaceable
The battery, the camera, the RAM, and the processor, and which is ultimately, now they're upgrading radically the screens, too.
So yeah, and everything is glued together. They're like glass sandwiches. You can't get in. They're designed so that regular people can't get in to fix them, and that's one of the things we're campaigning on to improve.
Right. I remember back in the 70s, there was a whole, you know, when Ralph Nader was going off on the car industry, planned obsolescence. It's now, because of Moore's Law, you don't even have to plan it. It's kind of automatic. So in the minute we have left, the call for action from Greenpeace on these issues.
Sure. So I mentioned before the Samsung petition. You can still sign that petition at greenpeace.org/USA/do-bigger-things. We also have a great resource available, our Guide to Greener Electronics, in which you can go and read about 17 different tech companies. I'm sure your smartphone is from one of the 17 we evaluated to better understand where they're making progress and where they still need to do work. And on that website, so it's our Guide to Greener Electronics, Google that, you'll find it. There's lots of ways to actually send messages to the companies that you patron. So you can go there and read about it and take action.
That's great. And if you want to preserve your privacy, you can DuckDuckGo it.
Oh, yeah. Good idea.
Instead of Google. But,
yeah.
But it's remarkable. So Elizabeth Jardim, the IT campaigner with Greenpeace USA, the website greenpeace.org/USA.
Mm-hmm.
Elizabeth, thanks so much for being
here.
Yeah,
thank you, Tom.
It's really great to meet you.
And
great to have you with us.
Thank you.
We'll be back in just a moment. We're going to have, Annie Leonard, holy cow, the executive director of Greenpeace USA, will be with us next. Stick around. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, and super happy to have in the, I'm in your offices where we are at a conference room at the headquarters of Greenpeace USA, and with us is Annie Leonard, the executive director of Greenpeace USA, and you can tweet her at Annie M. Leonard, do I have that right, or at Greenpeace USA, and Tom Wetterer, who is the general counsel, a fancy way of saying the head lawyer for Greenpeace USA, and it's great to have both of you with us. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
It's great having you. So, Annie, you guys are facing a, and I mean that in the gender-neutral way. Growing up in Michigan, that was it. Y'all are facing this real substantial threat, it seems, a legal threat. You want to tell us about it?
Yeah, that's right. We're facing two huge lawsuits, and Tom can tell you more of the detail of those lawsuits, but I wanted to first sort of frame them in the broader context of threat that we're seeing. You know, I've been an environmental activist for 30 years, and Greenpeace has been active for now 46 years. And during those times, we have fought to save forests and fought to stop toxic dumping and fought excessive consumerism and saved Antarctica and did all these things. But right now, what's really at threat is our ability to do that. And that may sound dramatic, but I'm actually deeply worried about this. We're seeing across the board in this country a crackdown on activism that is taking a lot of different forms. It's taking things like vilifying activists, like we saw President Trump talking about the NFL players saying they should be fired.
And Black Lives Matter.
Black Lives Matter.
And the 200 protesters who got busted here in D.C.
The J-20 protesters.
60-year felonies or something.
So vilifying, criminalizing like that, silencing dissent. There's a number, a couple dozen laws right now across the country that are at different stages of development that would actually outlaw basic fundamental organizing, gathering groups of people together, sharing information on Facebook. I mean, it's really scary. What we're seeing is through these SLAPP suits. SLAPP, as your listeners probably know, is a strategic lawsuit against public participation. There's two lawsuits right now that are aimed to silence and shut us down. Luckily, we're not really the silenceable types, so we're continuing the work and fighting even louder. And I'll hand the mic over to Tom, our lawyer, who can talk about the specific cases.
Right. Tom, what's... And by the way, I seem to recall, I wrote about SLAPP suits in a book I wrote, Unequal Protection, about the Supreme Court and the 14th Amendment back in 2002. And you can't hear me. And it seems to me that I'm generating audio. It seems to me that the SLAPP suits that I was... that one of the states, I think it was California, passed an anti-SLAPP suit statute. I mean, so tell us about SLAPP suits and what's going on with this.
Yeah, a number of states have anti-SLAPP statutes, but not all of them. So, that's still something that needs more legislation on that. But slaps are, so we have the two lawsuits, as Annie mentioned, and one was filed back in May of 2016 by Resolute Forest Products, and that's Canada's largest logging company. And the most recent one was filed this past August by Energy Transfer Partners, and that's the company behind the Dakota Access Pipeline. And in a nutshell, because they were both filed by the same law firm, Kasowitz, Benson, and Torres, and they've represented Donald Trump.
I was going to say Kasowitz is one of his lawyers.
Yes,
Mark
they've represented him on a personal basis on a number of different matters. And they've threatened the New York Times, for instance, with libel lawsuits for reporting on some of his escapades.
Remarkable.
So we're facing those two very big lawsuits. How much time do we have? Because they're both the one that was just filed was over 200 pages of the complaint.
We have 6.5 minutes.
Yeah, so I won't have a lot of time to go through all the details. But in a nutshell, they're coming after Greenpeace and other environmental groups for our advocacy work. Mm-hmm. And really speaking out on these issues, and the one case about to protect the boreal forest in Canada,
right.
And this latest one about
the mic a little closer.
The fight at Standing Rock against Apple, and they're trying to say that in essence they've structured as a defamation lawsuit about what we've been saying, but also throwing in RICO, which is racketeering laws, to say that we're also kingpins of a grand criminal enterprise to fight back against these companies and to commit crimes, to orchestrate crimes.
Wait. RICO is the racketeering organization or racketeering and influenced corrupt organizations, right?
You got it. I think it was from like 1970.
The racket that they're accusing you of?
Well,
this was designed to go against the Gambino family.
Exactly. That was the initial design of it. And they're saying that everything that we said about the companies in both cases are not only defamatory, but they're intentional lies about the company. They're designed to defraud our donors, and they're also designed to extort their customers with these lies. And then they've thrown in, if you take the time to read the 225 pages or whatever in the Energy Transfer lawsuit, they throw in a lot of other crimes. They put down on paper eco-terrorism and arson.
It's called the kitchen sink strategy of law, is it not?
Exactly.
Or some variation on that? Just throw everything at it and see what sticks.
On paper, and then if you actually read that, not only are those allegations of crimes very vague, really little detail, but there's no detail at all connecting Greenpeace and the other defendants to those crimes, because they can't, because we were not involved in those. We were involved in legitimate advocacy work, speaking out on these issues. And I will add, in the Energy Transfer case, it's also wrong about the story of what really happened at Standing Rock. They're trying to make us out to be the puppets, the puppeteers of what. And that's very it's wrong, and it's disrespectful of the indigenous people that really were leading the fight to protect their land, their water, and their sacred lands, their sacred rights. And Greenpeace, along with many others, were standing in solidarity with the indigenous people and really speaking out about these very real threats of the Dakota Access Pipeline, environmentally, and also the human rights groups.
Who were the other, you said us, who are the other groups who are being sued?
In the Energy Transfer case, there's also BankTrack, which is a small nonprofit in the Netherlands, and as their name implies, they do work with banks financing. So they, I think, sent some letters to banks, to some investors, just pointing out the risk, and a lot of the, at least in one case, where they're accusing them of wrongdoing the banks, those banks came forward and said, hey, we made the decision on our own based on these very real risks. And then they also named Earth First. We don't even think that's an entity, but they're also named as defendants. And then in the pod of the alleged criminal enterprise, they throw in people from like Wesley Clark, Democracy Now!, and a lot of other environmental groups like Rainforest Action Network, and also Earth Justice, who that group filed a lawsuit and on behalf of the Standing Rock Tribe, and they've mentioned them as part of this criminal enterprise for filing.
We're talking with Tom Wetterer, who is the general counsel, the head lawyer here for Greenpeace USA. Is the bottom line kind of essence of all that that they're trying to bankrupt you? I mean, litigation can be insanely expensive, and for a small group, even a small slap suit. I mean, slap suits were a big deal in the 70s and 80s, if you remember.
Yeah.
And as I said, I thought a couple states took care of them. But the principal thing is not to win in court. It's to destroy you economically, is it not?
It certainly is. And it's not necessarily the end game. I mean, they've claimed in the first suit with the treble damages of RICO up to like $300 million in damages. The latest one about $900 million, but it's not so much. It's
you're looking
not,
at $1 billion, and
well, and it's not so much even that because they don't really have any merit. But it's also the expenses of litigation. The point is to drag not only to drag the defendants, in this case certainly Greenpeace, through the expenses and the time and the distraction of the litigation process, but it's also to send a message to others to chill. Others from speaking out too, because you know they want to send a message that you'll be sued too if you dare to speak out, and you'll also have to face the expenses of litigation and the time that it takes. So that's really the point of these lawsuits, absolutely. And just yesterday, there was an amicus brief that was filed in support of our motion to dismiss in the energy transfer case by the ACLU and NRDC and other groups. And it talks about that very point of what this case and really these cases, what they represent for First Amendment rights and advocacy if they're successful. And they really need to be dismissed at the earliest stages so that they can't just file whatever in court and then have people be dragged through that process.
So in the 1 minute before we hit a break here, Annie, what can people do to support Greenpeace?
Well, they can be an activist. I'll tell you that's one thing. The point of these lawsuits is to squelch activism at the very time when activism is needed more than ever. So get involved. If you want to join Greenpeace, you can text RESIST to 877-877. Okay. That's text RESIST to 877-877 and join our rapid response team, and we'll send you great opportunities to get involved. But whether it's Greenpeace or any other group, we have got to stand up to this corporate power, stand up to these fossil fuel industries, not be silenced, not be intimidated. And the best way to do that is with cross-movement unity if we stand together.
So cross-movement unity being organizing with other groups?
Absolutely, and we're seeing that now in these cases. We have groups that are working on racial justice, civil rights, immigrants' rights, reproductive justice, all these different groups coming to us, partly because they respect Greenpeace and care about us, but also they know the entire model of being a publicly funded advocacy organization is what's at risk here. It's like first they came for Greenpeace, and if they silence us, who knows who's next?
Remarkable. So, Tom, you were going to add something to that.
No, I did want to add that in October, we had a hearing in California on the Resolute case. And I should add that Resolute originally filed in Georgia where there was not a very robust anti-SLAPP statute. Mm-hmm. And we had it moved to the proper venue, which was in California, where they do have a very good anti-SLAPP statute. And the judge there, Judge Tiger, Federal Court, San Francisco, dismissed the lawsuit in full, and on the state claims under the anti-SLAPP statute, he did hold that it was a SLAPP, and he awarded us attorney's fees on that. So it was a very good decision. They did get leave to amend, and this is another aspect of the SLAPP nature. They amended the lawsuit. We don't think it adds anything in substance, but now it continues the litigation process, and we once again have to respond to that, and it's going to drag it out for a number of months. I think I would say the same result that we will win, but continued being we're dragged through the litigation process even more.
Remarkable, absolutely remarkable. Annie, what I guess you're not the lawyer, but you're running this organization. How do you expect this to play out? What is your expectation? Or is that even an inappropriate question? I know you don't want to give away your legal strategy, or maybe you do. I don't know.
We absolutely expect to win both of these cases because they are totally frivolous and fabricated. I mean, they are accusing us of doing constitutionally protected advocacy work. Actually, either the constitutionally protected advocacy work or like crazy stuff, like the ETP lawsuit includes drug trafficking. in the list of charges.
Really?
Like, it's either, like, crazy stuff or what we are absolutely allowed to do. So how we expect this to play out is that we will win these lawsuits and, in the meantime, raise such awareness about the threats on our democracy that we will help to kickstart, along with many others, a powerful movement in this country that comes out at the end of this with the right to activism, the right to nonviolent protest, the right to free speech more deeply safeguarded in the law and in public consciousness. So we think that this is going to make us stronger. It is unfortunate, as Tom said, the burden in the meantime. I mean, the CEO of the pipeline company was interviewed and asked, does he actually expect to get $900 million. And he said, it's not about the money. It's not about winning these cases. It's about silencing, distracting, and intimidating us.
And draining you of money.
Absolutely.
Of
draining us of money. We are fortunate that we have insurance that helps with some of the legal bills, but we still have, you know, our strongest campaigners, our in-house lawyers, our comms people spending time on these lawsuits rather than fighting the fossil fuel companies that are threatening the future.
You want to add something, Tom? We have 30 seconds.
Yeah. Again, if one would read the energy transfer complaint, for instance, you'll see with it, again, it's not very specific at all, and with regard to Greenpeace and Bankrack. But if you read where it does talk about the things we do, like Annie said, you'll see things like press releases, public statements, letters to banks, you know, joint letters and things of that nature, and things that are just really need to be protected, fundamental First Amendment advocacy rights. And then the things that we were accused of lying about all were not only opinions and recognized by many people, the dangers of the pipeline, also very soundly based in facts and science.
Right. Remarkable. Here with Annie Leonard and Tom Wetterer. And have we exhausted the slap suits discussion, or is there more to that? Because I want to also talk about Greenpeace in general, but Tom?
Well, I could keep talking about slaps all afternoon, but I won't. I'll just add that I've already mentioned the law firm that filed this, and one of the lead partners in the case is Michael Bowie. He said in a Bloomberg piece that he's also in conversations with other corporations considering the same thing. So, you know, more are waiting to file these things, and just to underscore.
Wait a minute. You mean like more oil companies and stuff suing you guys?
From more oil companies, more other corporations, maybe other industries that are apparently in conversations with Michael Bowie and the Caswitz firm.
So we've now reached the point where corporate America is at war with the environmentalist movement, the civil rights movement, the human rights movement, you name it. Corporate America is at war with us.
Absolutely right.
That is astonishing. Annie?
What concerns me about this is the timing, that right now the government has stepped out of any kind of oversight role of protecting public health, public lands, public air and water. And so right when the government has vacated that position, they are squelching activists. And we are literally the last line of defense between the planet and these corporations that would want to plunder it.
Yeah.
So it's always bad to try to silence dissent, but especially right now because they need us so much.
Are you all doing anything with Trump is cutting up bear's ears and some of these other monuments, most of which are sacred lands for Native Americans, and the part of bear's ears that he cut out and turned over to the drilling and mining companies is one of the most fossil-rich sites. Fossils isn't the right word. Artifacts, you know, I mean, from Native American cultures. I mean, these are a few hundred years old, not millions, but it's obscene.
It is obscene. It is, you know, that Trump and his cronies talk about the deconstruction of the state. This is what deconstruction of the state means, deconstruction of protections, deconstruction of regulations. And this is, again, why they need us so badly.
Yeah.
It's terrifying.
Yeah. So what are the other things that Greenpeace is up to right now that people need to know about? We got about 2 minutes here.
You know, in spite of being really busy with these lawsuits, we are still fighting the good fight every single day. We are fighting fossil fuels and hastening the transition to a clean energy economy. We are fighting pipelines around this country. You know, this ETP suit is trying to squelch us from fighting pipelines. We think the best response is we're going to fight even more. So we're fighting pipelines. We have a great oceans campaign that is working to make 40% of the world's oceans marine sanctuaries. And we think we're going to be able to achieve that. We have a new campaign to fight against ocean plastic. I'm sure you've read about plastic is so pervasive in the ocean. It's pretty much everywhere. It's in every fish caught at this point. point. So we're fighting against plastics in the ocean. We're fighting against deforestation. We have a global goal to end global deforestation by 2020. Within that, our top priorities are the Congo, Indonesia, and the Amazon, because ecologically, those are the most important. We have a campaign that's pushing the IT sector to adopt renewable energy and longer-lasting products. We have another campaign that I think is really innovative, is that Greenpeace has a whole campaign on democracy. And some of our members first wrote and said, why is Greenpeace working on democracy? And the answer is because a healthy democracy is a precondition for a healthy environment. And we, you know, the democracy should be the best tool that we have to advance climate solutions, clean energy, all these things we know is possible. But we can't use our democracy right now. So we're working with NAACP, Communication Workers of America, Sierra Club, and Common Cause in this project called the Democracy Initiative, where we're going to get money out of politics, get voters back into politics, reclaim the democracy so that it actually can be a tool for public good again.
That's remarkable.
So we're keeping
busy. I know, you know, there's groups like CELDEF and Move to Amend that are doing, they call them democracy schools. Are you doing those kind of trainings and things?
Yeah, well, we don't do the actual trainings, but those groups are part of the Democracy Initiative, which is now over 50 organizations that have joined forces. And it's on the website. Look it up, Democracy Initiative. It's a great organization for people that want to make our democracy work for people.
Democracyinitiative.org?
Something like that.
Something like that. Yeah, you can easily yeah, search
you
for
can
it.
Find it.
Yeah, and that's and Greenpeace is part of that.
Yeah,
and
we're one of the founders.
So you're, oh, well, wow, marvelous.
Yeah. We got democracy, toxics, energy, oceans, forests. What am I forgetting? Those are the big ones.
And Greenpeace Worldwide is still taking names and kicking butt, right?
Yep, we're in about 50 countries now worldwide. And it's really cool to have such a reach like that, because sometimes we all get together on one thing. Like when we're fighting shell drilling in the Arctic, we had what's called a full power moment where every Greenpeace in the world got on that. And we're planning that kind of response to these lawsuits.
That's remarkable. Annie Leonard, the executive director of Greenpeace USA. Tom Wetterer, the general counsel for Greenpeace USA. Thank you both for being with us today. It's great
having you with us. Thank you.
And great meeting you both. Thank
See
you.
Thanks.
We'll be right back. When was the last time you looked forward to sitting at your desk all day? Since getting my new X chair, not only am I enjoying the time spent in my desk much more than ever, but I can't believe how much more productive I'm being. My X chair is unbelievably stylish, and thanks to all the ways that you can personalize it, it literally molds itself to my body. Trust me, this is not your grandfather's office chair. And because I don't need to keep having to take breaks or to stretch my back, I'm getting more done in a day than ever before. If you spend a lot of time in your office chair every day, then you need to try the X chair. In fact, here's a terrific deal just for my listeners. The makers of X chair want you to feel the X chair difference for yourself. So if you go to xchairtom.com, that's the letter X chair, T-H-O-M.com, not only will they knock $100 off the price, but they'll even throw in a free footrest if you use the promo code Tom. Just go to xchairtom.com now. I love my X chair, and you will too. So check out xchairtom as xchairtom.com. Check out xchairtom.com, and be sure to use T-H-O-M as the promo code for your $100 discount. Welcome back. We're live from Greenpeace's headquarters, and so happy to have with us Naomi Ages, the Greenpeace USA climate organizer, greenpeace.org/USA. You can tweet her at Captain Planet, although it's spelled without, the captain is without vowels. So it's CPTNPLANETTE.
Right.
Kind of a feminized Captain Planet. It's great. So that's your Twitter handle. And of course, you can tweet Greenpeace USA as well. Naomi, welcome back to the program. You've been on the radio show, you've been on our TV show, which we no longer do, but you've been with us all over the place.
It's great to see you again.
Yeah, it's nice to see you again.
Here.
Thank you. It's great being here. So there's so much going on. You were just telling me that ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, that writes so-called model where lobbyists get together and write legislation for Republicans to submit in state houses, just did something that ExxonMobil couldn't handle. Tell us about this.
ALEC put forth a resolution for conservative lawmakers to use that would overturn the EPA's endangerment finding. Now, that's the finding that says that carbon dioxide is a pollutant and the EPA has the right to regulate it, and that underpins a lot of the Obama-era climate policies that Scott Pruitt is rushing to undo and that the Trump administration is rushing to undo. And ALEC is trying to get rid of that legal ruling, which would make it a lot easier to undermine the EPA.
And in a really shocking move, Exxon publicly opposed that ALEC resolution. Now, Exxon is still a member of ALEC and still funds ALEC, so that means in some ways they are still contributing to climate denial and all of the bad legislation that ALEC tries to promulgate. But in saying even Exxon thinks that it's too far to undermine the endangerment finding, it's a really big split in the conservative opposition to climate activism.
Wow. When even Exxon thinks the Trump administration has gone too far.
Or at least ALEC has gone too far in trying to push the Trump administration.
Yeah,
but we won't know what happens with the resolution until ALEC votes on it, but Exxon said they would not support it in its current form.
Yeah. That's pretty impressive.
It is very interesting.
Unless they're doing it because there's something in the legislation that might limit that might increase their liability or something like that. You just never know.
You just don't know. Or maybe if ALEC softened the language in some way and still made it possible for Exxon to support, because Exxon is
it's hard to think of Exxon as a great corporate
or climate champion in any way whatsoever. Yeah. And they're still under investigation by attorneys general. They're still facing lawsuits. So they have a lot to work on in terms of climate policy.
Is the new CEO any different than Rex Tillerson?
We haven't seen him take any public positions yet that say that he wouldn't be. And he came up through Exxon just like Rex Tillerson did. So we assume it's more of the same. Until Exxon admits that the era of the fossil fuel is over and commits to, managing the decline of the industry, I'd say he's the same as Rex Tillerson.
Yeah.
Hopefully he won't end up as Secretary of State.
Yeah, there's that. And we'll see how long that lasts, too. So December 11th, there's a couple of really big things happening. You want to tell us about it?
Sure. So December 10th is actually International Human Rights Day, and it's interesting that we have two cases dealing with climate change and human rights with important moments on December 11th. So the first is there is a hearing in the Our Children's Trust case, the Giuliana case, which is the 21 youths suing the federal government for not appropriately adapting and preparing for climate change and establishing a right to a safe and stable climate for future generations. So the Trump administration is trying to have that case thrown out, and they filed this extraordinary petition in the Ninth Circuit, and that will have a hearing on December 11th. So it's really important. And we're hoping that the judges on the Ninth Circuit make the right decision there and allow the case to proceed as it was supposed to before the Trump administration filed this really unprecedented legal action to have it thrown out that there's really no grounds for. So that's the first thing. Also on December 11th in the Philippines is the first conference of the parties for the Philippines Commission on Human Rights Inquiry into the responsibility of the carbon producers for human rights effects of climate change. So after Typhoon Haiyan, Filipino disaster survivors, community organizers, NGOs, and Greenpeace Southeast Asia Philippines filed a petition with the Commission on Human Rights to ask them to investigate the 47 largest fossil fuel companies and cement producers for their responsibility in the effects of climate change and how those affect Filipino human rights. On December 11th, the commission has invited both the petitioners and the fossil fuel respondents to come and have a conference to decide how that inquiry will go forward and what the responsibility of those companies might be. And that's a world's first.
Wow. So correct me if I'm wrong, my understanding of what you just said was that the companies in the Philippines that are producing enormous amounts of carbon dioxide, basically another greenhouse gases, are being held responsible for the climate change that resulted in Typhoon Haiyan being one of the worst in the history of the world, I guess, or it was some mind-boggling thing. And it wiped out a lot of the Philippines. Is that the 30-second or the bumper sticker version of what you just said?
That's fairly accurate. It's corporations who operate outside of the Philippines whose activities are having effects inside the Philippines on the lives and livelihoods.
Could survivors of the floods in Houston or Florida or Puerto Rico file similar lawsuits? Is this the beginning of a trend?
We are seeing more and more climate litigation and climate legal actions happen in the wake of disasters like this. And certainly it depends on the context of each disaster, on the laws and avenues available to people. But it's not out of the question. And people should certainly be asking who's responsible for these climate damages and who's going to pay for them.
Right. And that raises also a whole other kind of set of possibilities after there was a town in, what was it, Kansas, Oklahoma, something like that, that about a decade ago got hit by a horrible tornado and leveled the town, completely leveled the town, and they got, you know, between the FEMA grants, Leo DiCaprio gave them a bunch of money, there were, you know, a bunch of people who raised money, and it's now called Greenberg, the name of the town, and it's, you know, America's first 100% renewable energy, mostly solar and wind. In fact, I think it's probably all solar and wind. Literally 100% renewable energy town. It's this beautiful demonstration project that's been operating for a number of years now. Why can't we do that in Puerto Rico? And why couldn't the Philippines do that after Hurricane Haiyan?
It's
cheaper than fossil fuels.
It's much cheaper, and it gets at questions of the just transition. You know, what's going to happen when we phase out fossil fuels, and how do we make that fair to the communities that need to be rebuilt, and how do we do that rebuilding? And so it's a complicated question, or the answer is complicated in terms of political will, lobbying by the fossil fuel industry, the idea that it's too hard or that we're locked into fossil fuels in some way because of contracts or because of political influence. So I think our message is that we can do it and we should do it, and we should look for models like that in Puerto Rico where we can rebuild in a way that doesn't lock in a fossil fuel future but really brings us into the renewable future that we need.
Right. Are you optimistic?
Sometimes. Mm-hmm. When I see the, I mean, I'm a lawyer and a campaigner, and I work on, like you said, political, financial, legal accountability for climate change. And I see the blossoming of climate litigation, and I see cases like in Germany where RWE was told by a court, actually, this case that you tried to have dismissed can go forward, and this Peruvian farmer can ask you to pay for your share of the adaptation he will have to make to protect his home. That does make me optimistic.
So the German courts have said that a farmer in Peru who is losing his crops because of climate change can sue a German coal-burning company?
He will, when a glacial lake melts because of climate change, his house, his farm, and those of his community will be covered by the lake. And so he sued RWE, a German energy corporation, for their share of their contribution to climate change. And so it was calculated that RWE's share was 1% of global emissions since 1750.
That's
so
huge.
Half of 1%. I apologize.
That's still huge.
It's still huge. And the court said we are allowed to go to the evidentiary phase to see if we can attribute this glacial lake melting to RWE, and they should pay for the adaptations that this farmer and this community will need to make.
That's
a huge precedent.
Yeah. In our first hour, we were talking with your general counsel, Tom.
Tom Wetterer.
Yeah, Tom Wetterer.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And
Annie. And he was talking about everything the Greenpeace is doing to defend itself against lawsuits. Are you involved in proactive lawsuits like the RTE lawsuit in Germany?
Outside of the U.S., a number of Greenpeace offices are instrumental in some of these cases in supporting them and bringing them and fostering them. And that's because climate justice it really needs to be achieved everywhere, and it's different in every country. So there's a case in Switzerland where almost 1,000 Swiss women have sued the federal government for not adequately protecting them from the effects of climate change because senior women are disproportionately affected by heat waves, which
Or
extreme cold. So that's one of the cases. In the Philippines, disaster survivors, climate change is really a human rights issue, and so we've really been supporting that effort, and Greenpeace is one of the petitioners in that case. So, yes, we are, and it's one of our most important initiatives, I think, going forward, because as we recognize more and more what a human rights issue climate change is, the legal avenues are going to be very important for protecting that.
And people who want to support what you're doing, greenpeace.org/USA?
Greenpeace.org/USA or Greenpeace Southeast Asia if you'd like more information on the Philippines petition itself.
What's the website?
Greenpeace.org. I think it's .ph. But if you go to the greenpeace.org website, you can search for any of our regional offices.
There's links to it.
Yeah.
And that's marvelous. Naomi Ages, Greenpeace USA climate organizer. She'll be back with us in just a minute to talk a little bit more about what's going on with Greenpeace here in the United States and around the world. You can tweet Naomi at Captain Planet, CPTN, Planet, PLANETTE. So send her a note. Say thanks for being on the program. We'll be right back. We're back with Naomi Ages of Greenpeace. So what else is on your mind? What's going on here with Greenpeace that we need to know about?
I think it's these cases that I've been talking about are really important in terms of what we can do right now when it feels like there's a lot of attacks on climate policy, there's a lot of attacks on the environment. These cases aren't going away. In fact, there was a hearing for the Massachusetts and New York Attorneys General investigation into what Exxon knew about climate change and then what it did with that knowledge over the past two or three decades just last week. And Exxon had what we would say was a terrible day in court. The New York judge was not having any of their arguments for why the case should be dismissed.
Really?
Yet. And so the decision will come in early 2018, but it seems that from what happened in court, the investigation will be allowed to go forward and Exxon won't be able to have it dismissed like they were trying to do. Mm-hmm. So, and that's just here in the U.S. I think outside of the U.S., we're really seeing where climate litigation is making a difference. And it's not just the legal wins themselves. It's the fact that this communicates risks to investors. These fossil fuel companies can be sued, can be held accountable. You shouldn't be putting your money into these projects. You shouldn't be putting your money into these corporations. Norway is trying to divest $35 billion from oil, gas, and coal stocks. That's a huge signal to the market.
Yeah, especially since Norway is one of the world's largest producers of oil.
That's right.
I mean, at least on a per capita basis, I think generally speaking, they're a major
producer. That's right. And so, they say that because they're doubly exposed from both their state oil fund and from their investments in other oil companies, right, it doesn't make economic sense for them to stay on both ends. And so they're trying to pull their money out of those stocks. Right. That's something to really be positive about. And I think the more we can prove how financially risky the fossil fuel industry is, the more you're going to see that happening.
We were in Tromsø, Norway, about 3 months ago at the Methane Research Center, mm-hmm. CAGE, where they're doing just breakthrough research on climate change. And it was right around that time that Norway announced that after, you probably know the year, what's in my head is 2030, but after a certain year, they're not going to allow the import or manufacturer of any fossil fuel powered vehicles. Is that a trend that's happening around the world?
It's certainly happening in Europe. We're seeing that more and more where cities are going to ban the internal combustion engine or try to phase out diesel vehicles. It's not happening here in the U.S. where we're looking at the rollback of fuel efficiency standards. But, I mean, that's a signal to the market as well that we're going towards electric vehicles. We're not going to be investing in fossil fuel powered vehicles.
Right. And that's a good thing.
We at Greenpeace think so. And it's good for the planet. Yeah.
Yeah. It's any sense of how the tax bill might affect that? I mean, there was that break for people who are buying electric cars.
Yeah, it's really tough to say what of this tax bill will become actual law and what will be.
It's really not even a tax bill. It's a social engineering bill.
Disguised as a tax legislation.
Yeah, it's a reinvent America bill. I mean, they even have fetal personhood in the damn thing.
That is absolutely terrifying.
Cory Gardner is so excited, the senator
from
Colorado. He finally got it in there, yeah.
Yeah, I think Ted Cruz was excited about it as well,
and Mike
from
Pence,
what I understand.
No doubt,
all of our greatest champions there of female reproductive rights.
Yes, right-wing patriarchs or right-wing advocates for patriarchy, for lack of a better way.
Yeah, so it's a monstrosity of a bill. I do not think it's going to be good on the whole for climate policy, any kind of.
Naomi Ages is with us here at Greenpeace headquarters. Thanks so much for being with us. Special thanks to the folks at Greenpeace for letting us use their office. And we'll be back tomorrow from another place here in Washington, D.C. And in the meantime, don't forget, democracy requires you. Tag, you're it. See you tomorrow.
Listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit tomhartman.com.